Welcome to the Organizational Transformation Kung Fu Podcast with your hosts, Sandy Varecchia and Jennifer Long.
Hi, welcome to Organizational Transformation Kung Fu. I am your host, Jennifer Long, coming to you from Denver, Colorado, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Varecchia, from Satori Consulting in Toronto, Canada. And
hello,
today's episode, hey, Sandy, how are you?
Good.
Today's episode, we're going to talk to you about the customer experience. Before we launch into that, I'm just going to give you the spiel on why we call this OT Kung Fu. Because organizational transformation is a discipline and it takes time and it takes practice. And when we work with our clients as executive coaches, we want to share with you some of the discipline and the practice that we put in to help leaders take their companies to places they haven't been before and to transform their organizations. So I'm excited today to talk about the customer experience. And maybe, Sandy, you can introduce the expert that we have on tap today.
I am thrilled to. Thanks, Jen. Today, we have Ray Kong, who's going to be joining us. And Ray and I go way back, way back. Maybe not way back, but way back.
I was telling Nick the other day that I remembered when he was born. I think it embarrassed him.
Probably. I didn't realize it was quite 30 years. All right. We go way back. And I'm thrilled to say that I'm going to introduce Ray as our podcast person today that we're interviewing. But Ray has also joined Satori Consulting on a part-time basis. So he's going to bring his wealth of experience to our firm in helping our clients in terms of customer experience and strategy. But let me tell you a little bit more about Ray. So he is an experienced marketer with over 25 years of experience in consulting and at the executive level of major Canadian corporate institutions. As a senior client partner at Ipsos, he currently serves clients in a number of different sectors, in customer experience, brand development and measurement, operational improvement, and strategy work. He really works as a hub to bring the best of Ipsos work all around the world to local clients. Ray's a published academic author. He served 3 years as an adjunct professor at the marketing at York University in Toronto, and he speaks regularly on consumer trends and marketing trends and best practices of organizations. And Ray and I didn't connect for a number of years, and I ran into him when he was giving a public address at a lunch and learn or something for the city, probably about 10 years ago. We reconnected, so really excited, A, to know him, A, to call him a friend, and C, to have him, join Satori, and as D, as to have him as our podcast guest today. So welcome, Ray.
Thanks. I'm so excited on every one of those fronts.
Excellent.
Fantastic. So let's kind of dive in, right, in terms of what does it mean for an organization to be customer led, right? This is a big idea. So I wanted to start, Ray. In January 2020, Harvard Business Review had this article out called Are You Undervaluing Your Customers? Right? It's time to start measuring and managing the worth of your customer. And so the premise of the article was really about the pressures of the earnings pressures that companies have and the need for profit and how these decisions often lead to the short changing of customers. And it talked about the short termism, right? That when people are really focused on the quarter and how that starts to erode loyalty and reducing the value that customers actually create for the business. It's kind of counterintuitive, right? This research that shows that loyalty leaders, the ones that focus and measure customer loyalty, actually grow at 2.5 times faster rate-wise than their peers in the industry that they're in. So I think that's an interesting statistic to look at. So knowing that when you're customer-focused, right, that you're growing at 2.5 times the rate, I'm curious, why don't all organizations lead with customer-first strategies?
You know, there's a really important word that I think that you just used, and that's counterintuitive. And in a lot of ways, being customer-first is is counterintuitive, and not deliberately. So I think maybe one of the things that is important to say is that, you know, for organizations that are not customer led, it's not because they're being malicious, but it's because it's just unconscious. It's not a natural behavior. And I love the Kung Fu analogy for the podcast, because it requires discipline to do something which is unnatural or counterintuitive. Why is that? So, you know, if we take a smaller business, for example, a smaller business is, if you're an architect, you go into business as an architect. If you're an engineer, you go into business as an engineer. If you're a chef, you go into business as a restaurateur. And your business is your business. Your business is running the operations of the business. It's the discipline or the science or the profession which you've chosen. And therefore, it is kind of counterintuitive to think first about the customer or your the people that are using your business or the people that are experiencing your business, to put that first as opposed to your chosen profession first. You know, there's other reasons why, you know, time, energy, legacy infrastructure, there's a whole host of reasons. One that is also well been established is that, you know, the I'll call it the MBA paradigm of being shareholder value led. Mm-hmm. That, you know, many MBA students, or a whole generation full of MBA students, learn through their MBA school is not about customer led. It's about, you know, providing value to the shareholder, which on so many ways, again, the word counterintuitive, is counterintuitive to being customer led.
Right.
I think every organization probably has its own unique set of circumstances as to why you're not customer led. And I think it's important to recognize what those might be and to deliberately change to be customer led and experience led, because, you know, it is way more profitable, way better, and frankly, way more satisfying for everybody involved to be more experience led. You put your thumbs down.
I was giving Ray the thumbs down when he was doing shareholder value. It's like, boo, right? It really is becoming a little bit passe if you're a little bit more progressive, especially when you think about, you know, the whole other podcast we could do on the employee experience.
For sure. But I was just thinking, before we kind of dive into what's the difference between customer-led and kind of operationally-led, I'm just thinking of strategy maps, and they're big. Everybody seems to have their balanced scorecard and their strategy. And a big piece of that is around the customer. And so I'm just wondering if you have any opinion, Ray, as whether that strategy map, the visual strategy map, needs to be different. So rather than kind of giving the same weighting almost to everything.
I think across the gamut of different types of industries, I think that the weightings need to be different for sure. And I think that one of the things that is really important to recognize is that it's an and, it's not an or. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're an architectural firm, of course the architectural principles and the design are important, but the customer is important. So it's an and. You know, if you're a restaurateur, the quality of the food that you put out is important, and the customer experience is important. And so looking at it as a or, which some organizations tend to do, is, in my opinion, not the right thing. There is a primacy of which you need to look at things, because every business is different. But to not even include what, you know, the customer experience, not even to consider how your constituents experience your organization, to me and to many people, is just a big mistake.
Mm-hmm. So what is the difference between experience-led versus finance or operations or technology?
Every organization has its DNA. And, you know, as I alluded to earlier, I think the DNA, the DNA, like all DNA, is hard-coded into organizations. Banks are finance-led. Insurance companies are actuarial-led. Manufacturing companies are process and production-led. The difference is that you have a primacy on understanding how the customer experiences the tasks that they are undergoing, and not be bound by the internal structures or the internal processes of your organization. In some ways, it's about being more extroverted, looking from the outside in, than the inside out. It's easy to say, but when you actually think about that and when you actually put that into action, the way that you manage your organization and the way that you things that you change and how you do things vastly changes. It's very, very different. Some people ask me, you know, what's the first thing that you need to do in order to be more customer-led? Like, what's one simple step to do? And, you know, what I like to say is go hire somebody off the street and talk to them, have them experience your organization in the way that your customers do, and then talk to them in depth about that. It sounds like something blatantly obvious to do, but you know, how many restaurateurs, I will suggest, how many restaurateurs actually receive food as delivered by an Uber Eats driver to their house in the way that we receive food from that restaurant? And, you know, does the food come lukewarm? Does it come all spilled and packaged because the driver spilled it? Does the fries soggy because the ketchup from the hamburger, you know, leaked over the fries? It's perfect when it leaves the store, but you haven't seen how the customer receives it. And so being customer-led or being experience-led really does mean thinking, not even thinking, experiencing and driving your decisions based on how your customers, your stakeholders, your members, your employees experience your organization. And to make changes based on that, as opposed to based on whatever other dimensions are currently driving the organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another, you know, and you know, the examples go on and on. So I was cooking the other night and I opened a package of green beans. So, you know, in the store now, you know how we can't really buy loose green beans anymore. You open the package of green beans, and because it was cello wrapped, the thing exploded because cello wrap doesn't tear neatly, it just breaks open. And so opening that, the beans fell all over the floor. Well, you know, if I was talking to that organization who wrapped the beans and who was selling those beans, I'd tell them that's terrible customer experience because my beans were all over the floor and I'm in the middle of cooking.
I've spilled the beans.
I spilled the beans. Well done. I didn't even think about that one. That's good. I spilled the beans.
But not to mention, they typically, because they're in that wrap, they're you know, kind of baking in the wrap as well. So they're not as fresh either. There's lots of
they're not
downside.
As fresh everywhere, you know. And there's so many examples of this. Another one that I, you know, that we can think about is, not that we've been to the movies in a long time, but you go to the movies and you buy your popcorn and your drink and you've got your hands full, and then you get to the person and then you have to find your ticket to get into the cinema. But your hands are full of popcorn and there's no place to put the popcorn. And it's like, to us, it seems so blatantly obvious, but it's not, because the organization doesn't think about it that way. They think about it in terms of where, you know, operations and security and making sure that people don't get in without a ticket, and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Looking at it from the wrong side, from the
outside. Looking at it from the wrong side, and there's
I'm sure it's got to be a big eye opener for executives who actually go through the experience and what they discover, right? At times where there's unintended consequences of some of the decisions of the journey.
Absolutely unintended consequences. And you know, sometimes, you know, the forehead slapping moments, like, why did we not think of this? Well, because, you know, because you've been focused on other things, not that they're less important and not that they're less useful. You just didn't think about this. But that's interesting that you mentioned executives of companies, because one of the mistakes that I think some executives do is they say, well, yeah, we experience our company. I bank at the company that I bank at. I eat in the restaurant. But you're doing that from a place of privilege. You're doing that from, you're not experiencing it as a customer experiences it. I worked with an airline once, and one of the airline executives said, well, I fly our airline two or three times a day, a week, or sometimes even a day. I said, yeah, but it's known who you are. You're flying business class. You're getting escorted through security. You're getting escorted onto the plane at the last minute before the door closes. The cabin crew knows who you are. You're not experiencing it the way a customer with a
Nobody's
family.
Nobody's losing your luggage.
No. Nobody's losing your luggage.
Totally. Yeah,
that's right. Right. It doesn't. It's not the same. It's not the same experience at all. Right.
Mm-hmm. Not the same experience at all. And even, you know, even using that example, the family that's going on vacation, you know, because they can only afford one vacation every 3 years, you know, from booking right to landing and returning. You don't know that experience. You don't know what they go through because you are experiencing your brand from a place of privilege. On every level. And so it is important to get that external view and get that external, I'll call it independent view of your organization.
I think the other thing when I think about that is when I'm talking to clients, they typically go to their staff to say, what's the experience? Because the staff are frontline but they're also experiencing from the wrong side of the fence as well. And when I do customer journey, there's a disconnect between what a customer will say and what a staff member thinks happened during that journey, like a large disconnect. So having, you know, a view from the other side is going to be critical because you can't do it from the inside out.
Well, right. So one of those things is if you're looking at the touch points, right, versus the entire journey, and maybe Ray, you can talk a little bit about that whole dynamic, like, cause the customer service rep only had the one call, right? Versus the who else has been talking to him.
Yeah, the beginning to the end, from the first thought, the initial thought to the last transaction.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that is maybe one of the biggest reasons why you shouldn't be doing it from the inside out, because you don't look at the whole journey. You know, since we're talking about customer service reps, let me relay to you a story. There was an organization that we were working with once where They were not understanding why, you know, they were having a lot of trouble getting more satisfaction scores out of their customers who call their contact center. Because our call statistics are good. We're answering calls quickly. People aren't waiting very long. Why is it that our scores are so low? So we looked at it from end to end and really even just extended at both ends of the interaction. Things, the experience from the customer's end. So if you think about that, customer has a problem. And the first thing customers do these days is not call 1-800 your company, because everybody hates calling 1-800 your company. The first thing they do is go onto the web and they look for the answer to solve their problem. They look various different sources to answer their problem. And, you know, they're a little bit miffed because they have a problem. Well, they can't find the answer, so their annoyance level goes up just a little bit. Now, oh my God, now I have to call 1-800 your company. And my annoyance level goes up a little bit because my call is really important to you, but the wait time is 20 minutes. Oh, the wait time is 20 minutes. Okay, let me see if I can navigate the IVR.
You're making and me hurt the... just talking about it.
And here's the nine buttons you need to press in order to get to where you want to go. And I get to number nine and I forgot what number one was. And so I'm going to zero out.
I hate the robots.
And then somebody finally picks up the phone. So my annoyance level has gone from, let's call it, from -1 to -5. Mm. And so somebody finally picks up the phone and I say, oh, thank God, I've got somebody. And what does the customer service rep say? The customer service rep says, before I can help you, before you do anything, I need to know who you are. So let me ask you these 5 questions to prove that you are who you are. So my annoyance level has now gone to -7 because I've been dealing with this issue for however long I've been dealing with this issue. But of course, the organization only knows from the moment that the phone has been picked up that, that this has been an issue for you, where you've got a whole history there.
Right.
What we did for this organization, based on this whole journey work and this customer first experience work, was to say, let's change the contact center rep's script. Let's change it from, I need to authenticate you, I need to find out who you are, to, how can I help you? And to shut up. Than to just let the customer get off of their chest all of that frustration, all of that annoyance, get it out there. And then the customer service rep says, I can help you with that. But before I do, I need to authenticate you and tell you who, and to make sure that I'm talking to the right person. And then their scores went up. Just that
I'm simple.
Let me just vent for a minute, especially if your internet service goes out and then you call and it tells you you're going to get better service if you go online.
Oh, but the reason I'm here is because I can't bloody well.
Like, why would you put that in your recording? You're an internet provider. The only reason we're calling you is because we don't have internet.
Oh, you gotta love it.
The scripts, right? People thinking about the scripts. So, I mean, as you're talking about this, what's coming up for me, right, is what is the company measuring, right? How do they look at measures, and what makes a good measure in terms of this whole thing?
Wow. I mean, you're asking really big questions, like really big questions. So what makes a good measure? You know, loyalty is a popular measure as measured by recommendation, but that's an outcome. That's not an input. And, you know, the complaint that I think that we hear a lot, the most common complaint we hear a lot, is people saying, well, you know what, I have this score and it's going down, but I don't know what to do about this. I don't know how to make this go up. You know, in the early days of loyalty measurement, I used to joke. People say, well, how do I get my loyalty score up? How do I get my recommendation score up?
Before you even go there, what the heck is a loyalty score?
Well, you're asking very big questions.
Yes. But likelihood to recommend is a popular
likelihood
one.
Likelihood to recommend is a loyalty score.
The NPS score. Yeah.
Is the NPS score is a loyalty score. But you know what? There's lots of different kinds of loyalty as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's emotional loyalty, there's functional loyalty. But yeah, that, I mean, these are very big questions. But I think that maybe I should loop back. I think what you measure and when you measure it and how you measure it is all important. Because many organizations, I think, measure the wrong thing at the wrong time, at the wrong cadence, and they end up getting frustrated because, well, in the case of our contact center, you know, their measure would have been, their measure might have been the speed to answer the call. Well, that doesn't help because the customer's frustration level was high from the very, very beginning, as opposed to, you know, the efficiency or the friendliness of tone of the contact center representative, or the empathy of the contact center representative. Those would all be valid measures, some more important and some more able to be impacted than others by the individuals who are being measured. Mm-hmm. It's a hard one. It requires a lot of careful thought. It is a huge topic.
Yeah. Well, as you're talking about it, here's the, I'm coming in from the journey perspective, is when a customer representative says to me, at the end of this call, I want to be able to send you a thing so you can rate your service. And I always feel like if I say no, does their interest in helping me go down because they know I'm not going to rate them?
Interesting.
Versus if I say yes, then are they going to stay on their game? And I don't know who else in the big bad world has that reaction, but I'm always suspect of why. If I say no, are you suddenly going to not take as much interest in helping me out?
Well, that's a really interesting point that I've never thought of before. What I thought you were going to say is where they say, you know what, if you don't give me a 9 or a 10, it's going to reflect negatively on me. So give me a 9 or a 10.
Right. Well, right.
Yeah.
It's going to reflect negatively if you suck at this. So, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I remember when this started to become popular, I don't know, in the 80s, I guess, Ray, I don't know.
In whatever incarnation. Yeah.
Yeah, some of the larger banks were beginning to do the calls on a regular cadence. And we had people in branches that were putting tens or nines above their teller wicket in hopes that people would subliminally see it and know that they needed to rate them a 10 for their customer experience. So there's a lot of that, that whispering that goes on, I think, so that people can get their scores.
Which is so counterintuitive to the whole spirit of it, which I guess, is maybe an important dimension. I mean, the spirit of this is improvement, and the spirit of this is growth. The spirit of this is not gaming the system to achieve a score.
Yeah, but that's what we do, right? That is exactly where we go, because I'm only going to get promoted or a bonus or an extra day off if my scores are looking good. And so it's an interesting thing. And I'll just tell you, relay a story. Several years ago, we were doing a customer service development program for a cable company. And one of the things we did was we had this mystery caller program, and they had their internal metrics about first call resolution, you know, how they troubleshoot it, all this kind of stuff. And we came in behind to coach the service aspect of it. And so they're worried about their call center metrics, and they've kind of got that standard menu of metrics. And then we show up as customers. So I had a bunch of coaches who would just call and play random customers. We had customer information, and we would just dive into my cable's out and blah, blah, blah. And then we'd stop the call halfway through and say, I'm the mystery caller, and I want to talk to you about how you felt you handled this conversation. And they'd be like, oh my God, thank God. Thank God. I didn't know how to, you know, and they would sort of suddenly have this moment of confessing of what they were struggling with. And it was a very interesting experience, because not only were we looking at the unintended consequence of the whole program was they got a whole insight into really what was happening with the customer based on the experience outside of what the call metric was telling them. And so it was kind of an interesting dynamic to see when you actually break the call and they're like, oh, I was really trying to figure out what to do with you. And you know, and they gave us standard scenarios, right? It wasn't like we were making stuff up that was super hard, but insightful, I think, for the customer representative who just got coaching on the fly on here's what would have helped. Here's what you could have said to me that would have made a difference. Here's how you could have asked the question and not gotten that response, right?
So. That's very interesting. I've never heard of interrupting a call right in the middle, but what a useful tactic that is.
Yeah.
Impactful and memorable. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, cause it was that moment of learning on the fly. So there's an idea. There's an idea for everyone.
I want to explore this a little bit more, because we set these internal metrics. Right. And I don't know how many clients phone me saying, you know, how should we measure our call center? How should we measure our staff? How should we measure X, Y, and Z? So you have these internal measurements, but when you're measuring something like loyalty or customer experience, we're not looking at them together. So is there a way to correlate what you should be measuring internally to ensure that customer experience is higher?
I think that it is an and again. I know people sometimes get frustrated when I always say, well, it's an and. But it is an and I guess it depends on the situation and what the organization's trying to do. If the organization really does need throughput for really good reasons, then call efficiency and speed of average handling time, for example, might be one of the important measures. So, but then you need to balance that off with the experience. Moving over to a restaurant example, you know, there are restaurants who thrive on turns, on the number of customers that go through the restaurant and how long each table sits there. That's an important metric, not to say that it's not, but to have the waiters start to clean up the table before the customers even finished is maybe not the best way to encourage that. So you have to look at them together in balance. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe the answer to the question is, what is the right balance between all of these? And I think that the call it a revelation, more recent revelation, has been that the customer view is an important part of the mix, whereas in many ways it has not been a part of the mix at all for too long, since the primacy of shareholder value add in larger corporations anyway. I will say that, you know, sometimes what we're talking about might sound a little bit alien to smaller organizations or ones in service organizations, because they're naturally more attuned to what their customers are looking for and more attuned to their customer experience. But I would suggest that even then having a third party view, or even and having an external view of how, you know, your customers experience your brand, your organization is very insightful, and it doesn't have to lead to big expensive fixes. You know, the call center script example that we use, that's just an easy fix that can be done once and then away you go, and it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
A huge difference.
You know, I was talking with a client earlier this week, and they're a member-based organization, and they were saying, we're having this conversation about how they believe that their customer service is far above any of the larger companies in the sector that they work. And they don't understand why people aren't flocking to them because their customer service is so much better. And so we had a conversation about, well, how do you know? And so they don't do anything formally in measure, but internally they talk about how much better they are at customer service. And I almost think that they have convinced themselves of that because they've never tested it. And so putting these metrics in place would help them know where they are in that zone or in that continuum.
It would help them know where they are in that continuum and help them identify what to fix to make a big, to make that difference.
Well, and we're talking about the continuum, right? So, but that leads me to the question, and maybe it would help the listeners talk a little bit about a journey map and what that is.
Mm-hmm.
A journey map is one of those. So really a journey map is, you know, some of the listeners might know what user experience is. User experience is something that is done a lot in the web space. These, you know, has always been done a lot in the web space. That you sit there and you go through a website, and you understand how people use your website. A journey map is really starting with a task and running it through from the perspective of a customer to understand what are the positives, what are the negatives, what are the moments of truth in terms of how they experience your brand and your organization in doing that task. And so a good example might be buying a house. Or actually, no, let's call it differently. You know, financial institutions, banks often talk about, well, let's talk about the mortgage experience. Well, right there, that tells you that's not a journey map, because people don't go out looking for a mortgage. People go out looking to buy a house. And to buy a house is a longer journey and a different journey involving many more steps than just getting a mortgage. And so to really truly understand how you can provide better mortgages, you have to understand how customers are buying houses and what are the dynamics and emotions and processes that they go to buy a house. My more at home favorite example, pun intended, my more at home favorite example is buying groceries. You know, I'm going to the store to buy groceries, but I'm actually shopping for meals. And so why is it that the spaghetti sauce is in a different place from the spaghetti? And why is it that the lettuce is over here, but the salad dressing is over there?
And why is it they make you buy the frozen food first before you get to the checkout? So you go to the so you'll go through the store faster.
Or the tomato sauce isn't with tomatoes. Oh my God, I can think of so many examples of that. And every time so I go, I think, why isn't tomato sauce with the tomatoes? Like, why do I need to go to another aisle? They're all the same stuff. One's just pureed.
Exactly. But even if you think about it even more broadly, shopping, you know, I've got to get into my car. I've got to, you know, sometimes, okay, this is, you know, I've got my family with me. My kid isn't sick. I'm in a hurry. I have to find parking. I have to go into the store. These days I've got to wait maybe in line. Then I've got to sanitize my hands. All of these things. But all of these things are part of the same journey. Whereas a grocery store, by default, the meat manager will want to understand, you know, the meat manager only thinks about the meat counter. And the produce person thinks only about the produce. And the bakery only thinks about the bakery. And so you don't. By looking at it from the entire journey, the entire task to be done from the consumer's perspective, you look at things a little bit differently. I still don't understand why groceries are not grouped by, even if there's a section where it's grouped by meal. or even now that I think about it on the fly, why is there not a meal of the day? that the grocery store creates. It could be just one little section that says, if you're just looking for tonight's meal, go here and buy everything.
There's like this little section when you walk in, you first hit the door, and maybe it's just my Whole Foods, but the you walk in the door and there's a cooler, an open cooler cabinet, and it's like brunch. And so they've got eggs, orange juice, bacon, croissants. It's all just like right there. And you hit it and you're like, oh, brunch. Right?
Nice. I can just stand here and buy everything.
Yeah.
So then to the question off the top of the cast, like why is that not the case everywhere? Because it makes so much sense. And that's because if you go into the store, you'll buy more if you're forced to go through every aisle.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll go through faster if you have to do the freezer food first. So this is making me think of, do you just do a journey map, or does an organization have multiples? Is it like
multiples for sure?
Okay. Talk a little about that.
Multiples for sure. But the temptation of what organizations tend to do is they try to do everything and boil the ocean. So, you know, if there's, you know, point number two, one thing to start tomorrow to become more customer centric or more experience led is pick a journey, pick one thing that you do and run through the journey map, fix that, then move on to the next one, then fix that, then move on to the next one. Don't try to boil the ocean because you'll be boiling the ocean.
Right.
You know, typically our counsel is to pick, you know, one of the most important things that you're trying to do for your customer. And so some organizations, you know, our most important thing that we're trying to do is to get new customers. Okay, what is the new customer onboarding process look like?
Right.
What's that journey? How do people go from being somebody who doesn't know you to being a customer? Let's look at that process. Hmm. And, you know, then you go from there.
So, Ray, one of the things that I'm just thinking about as you're talking about this is so many organizations are trying, you're talking about boiling the ocean. They're just trying to do so much all the time. Is there an example of an organization that you've worked with that has gone down the customer experience road really, really well and has stuck to it? So they've gone to their journey mapping, they've figured out their pain points, they've stuck to it without kind of spiraling back to there's so many other things we could be doing.
You know what, Sandy, I have to say no.
Why do you think?
As you know, I work with very large organizations and very well-established organizations that have a lot of legacy and a lot of silos, and it runs everything from, you know, technology silos to organizational silos. You know, the credit card managers are paid to think about credit cards. Mm-hmm. The IT managers to think about risk and IT security. And there are too few organizations that I'm familiar with that actually organize the entire organization by customer journey, or by customer task, or by customer's period. That's not to say that there aren't some medium and smaller ones that do that, but the ones where I have come across, I know it's funny, I think maybe the people get embarrassed, right? So people, they present their business card that shows you how old I am, people business cards, and they say, you know, on their business card is, my job is mortgage experience, or my job is food, food experience. And people look at them and go, you're a kooky, left-leaning, tree-hugging hippie, aren't you? Because it's not traditional, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Again, it boils down to, it's unconscious, it requires discipline, it requires persistence. What's the word that we used? What word was it that you used at the outset?
Kung fu, discipline, practice.
It requires all of those things.
Dedication, right? Otherwise, your customer experience is just like a Weight Watcher. It's just the 10 pounds you keep losing over and over again because you have to go back.
That's what I was just about to say. You know,
in the pantry. Yeah.
Regularly, I say I'm not going to eat fried chicken, and I'm going to exercise more, and I'm not going to eat, you know, live a healthier life, and I still find myself looking for the ice cream that didn't help.
Well, this kind of this customer experience strategy thing feels to me like it's a good thing to hook into a leadership philosophy, like the Infinite Game, right? So the Simon Sinek philosophy around we're not competing to win or lose against our competition, we compete against ourselves. And that if we're continually competing against ourselves, we're always looking at that customer experience because that's really what gives us edge in the long term. And so maybe tying it to that broader leadership philosophy about the infinite game, which is a different way to actually take your company. And so I think it feels like this is a huge topic and we've just kind of touched the surface of all of the stuff that's out there. So maybe as a way to kind of wrap up, give our listeners maybe the top five things they need to consider when assessing being customer led and what that right strategy might be for them. Should they look at it operationally and they decide to put it into their strategy?
I think you said one of them, which is that it's a philosophy, not a thing. It really is a way of thinking, not a number of activities. I would say that, you know, we talked about just start with one journey map, one journey, and look at it and go from there. And be in it for the long run. Don't be in it for flavor of the month, because flavor of the month isn't going to help you. I'm not sure, is that five yet? Or
that's not five. Three.
Yep.
But that's okay.
23. You know what? Get started by having a third party look at your organization and how external parties.
Don't use your frontline people. Don't ask them.
Use your frontline people. Don't use your employees and don't use your executives. As well meaning as that is, don't use your executives.
Yeah.
And I think always remember that it's an unnatural act in many ways. It doesn't come naturally to organizations. And so you need to be persistent with it and need to always keep it. Always need to remind yourself to look at it that way.
Yeah. You know, and I think to tie that up, I think it's, you know, strategies work when they're top down, bottom up, side to side, and everybody buys into it. So when you talk about it being a philosophy, it's really understanding why why the need for the change in philosophy and how it transcends through the organization, and then start talking about touch points, as opposed to gravitating to that journey map as the first thing you need to do, is really having that why conversation that we've talked about before, you and I, Jen, about, you know, what's the purpose of this? What do we need to achieve? And why is it important to our organization? And start getting the buy-in from people, because it takes time. Because this would be an organizational change of a big magnitude that we're talking about. That does take a lot of time and effort and consistency in order to make it happen.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, and so with that, Ray is on Sandy's team. So if you're interested in learning more about this, find Ray and Sandy at Satori Consulting and put your questions out there, because I think this is definitely, I think, the future of business and being fit for purpose. This is really a key piece of a growth strategy. Mm-hmm. And excellent. Thanks so much, Ray, for sharing.
My pleasure.
Sharing some of this stuff,
Ray.
You know. And we'll look forward to our next podcast when we put that out again next month. This is goodbye from Denver.
Goodbye from Burlington, Ontario. And Ray, you're in Toronto.
I'm in Toronto. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening, and please visit Sandy's website at satoriconsultinginc.ca. That's SATORI consultinginc.ca. And Jen's website at managementpossible.com. Thanks again.